Welcome to the Fan Experience, a Phoenix Rising supporters podcast. Stick around for interviews, analysis, fan stories, and our love affair with Phoenix Rising. And now, to kick things off, is your host, Niall McCarthy.
What's up, football-loving maniacs? This is Devin Kerr, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Phoenix Rising family, what an exciting time of year this is as we move toward the end of the regular season and into the playoffs. I'm so proud of our team for being the first to clinch a place in the playoffs, for getting another win this weekend, and for inching ever closer to the next prize, the Supporters' Shield, and with it, the coveted home field advantage. What a joy it was to be at the game this weekend. In the next segment, I'm going to chat with Kelly about the game and about the game day experience. There were a few things that made the fan experience just a little more special this weekend. Special shout out to our goalkeeper, Andre Rawls, who earned the USL Save of the Week last week. Andre has been a rock for us this season and has the distinction of being unbeaten with Phoenix Rising. What that means is that we have not lost a game when Andre has been between the sticks. Our hats are off to you, Andre. The US men's national team played twice in the last week, winning 2-0 to Jamaica and losing 1-0 to Panama. We've talked about the strong connection between Phoenix Rising and Jamaica, but we've never talked about our connection to the US men's national team. Well, it appears that we're not a million miles away from having a connection. You know that theory about how we're all connected to each other by six or fewer social connections? Well, I learned that we're just one connection away from Ricardo Pepi, who scored three World Cup qualifying goals for the US men's national team in the last few weeks. Here's the connection. In 2019, Ricardo Pepi played for USL League One team North Texas SC. Phoenix Rising's very own Arturo Rodriguez also played for North Texas SC that year. Boom! What's even cooler is that Arturo won the Young Player of the Year award, beating out Ricardo Pepi, as well as beating out his teammate Ronaldo Damos, who is now the number one striker for Orange County and one of the top goal scorers in the league. Arturo also beat out Jonathan Gomez, another North Texas SC player that year. Gomez is currently a standout for Central Division team Louisville City FC and is preparing to transfer to play in Europe. That's an interesting story in its own right. Speaking of stories, last week our midfielder Aidan Quinn got a chance to tell his story on a podcast named Down the Pub. The podcast host, Anthony Abbott, does a really great job. His interviews are a lot of fun. He goes deep, but at the same time, keeps it light and tight. It's really good. Check it out. Getting back to today's show, after we hear about this week's game against Oakland Roots, we're moving on to talk about the USL standings, which are so rich with plot lines right now as we've only 3 weeks to go in the regular season. After that segment, we'll preview the two games that are ahead of us this week, Orange County on Wednesday and Las Vegas Lights on Saturday. That's all to look forward to. To kick us off, let's get into that game against Oakland Roots with our guest, Kelly McCarthy.
Yo, 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 what's up, Footy fans? This is Hugh Roberts from the Backyard Footy Podcast, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Phoenix Rising family, on Saturday, October 9th, while honoring Indigenous Peoples Day, our boys hosted Oakland Roots SC under a clear and chilly desert sky. At kickoff, the crescent moon hung low over an excited crowd in the Phoenix Rising soccer complex in Wild Horse Pass. And 90 minutes later, we were 3 points richer after beating our guests 1-0. We maintain our unbeaten home record, we celebrate another goal from Darren Maddox, and we nod to our man of the match, last week's USL Save of the Week winner, our esteemed goalkeeper, Andre Rawls. Joining us today to talk about the match is Kelly McCarthy. Kelly, welcome to The Fan Experience. I'd actually love to start out by talking about the fan experience at the game. It was a fantastic atmosphere. What did you think?
I agree with you. It was such a wonderful atmosphere. And I think part of that had to do with the lovely, cool temperatures. So absolute shout out to the arrival of fall to Phoenix.
Thank you, Mother Nature.
Exactly. Speaking of mothers, we brought my mother to the game. She's visiting in town from Jersey. So it was really cool. Of course, she is a religious podcast listener. So it was fun for her to put some faces and feet and skills to the names that she's so familiar with. And it
was
cool.
Is that who was sitting next to me there?
Eating your French fries. And it was just cool to sort of revisit the game through someone else's eyes, you know what I mean? And just kind of come again to that appreciation of what an awesome fan experience it is in our stadium, how affordable it is to go to a game, how affordable it is to get those fries, to eat something, and just the beautiful pitch. So definitely was really nice to have that experience freshly through her. And also definitely wanting to acknowledge, you know, do a land acknowledgement here. As you mentioned, we were celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day, which is actually today, the 11th at the time of this recording. So really want to acknowledge the land that we're fortunate to be on at the stadium. And I guess in terms of the fan experience, kind of, you mentioned the moon, it was distractingly beautiful. And then also we kind of had an interesting experience with that Star Spangled Banner rendition. I think the singer herself was awesome, but the speakers were cutting out. And as a result, the people in our section joined in sort of to help her out. And so people sang the Star Spangled Banner, which is kind of never done. And that was just kind of, that was just interesting. I was like looking at my mom to be like, this isn't actually a normal thing, but she was too busy singing. So I just went with
totally. And it was really kind of respectful. It wasn't people blasting out Star Spangled Banner. It really felt like she needs a little bit of help because the technology is letting her down. And mm-hmm. so people in a very low voice were singing along, and it just led to, you know, that beautiful atmosphere with that moon hanging there. It was really great. I think the supporters section were giving it 100% as always on the night. So a shout out to them. The food was fantastic. Enjoyed those, what we've termed apostrophe French fries. If you haven't had them, definitely get yourself some apostrophe French fries. $4. Fantastic. So Kelly, it was a great night. Can you set the scene for us? Not the scene on the pitch, but overall in the Championship League.
Sure. And there's so much to be said, and I know this has kind of become a part of our roundup lately, and that's simply because we are so close to the postseason. It's just really important to kind of explain the stakes as they relate to the postseason for the two teams that are playing. So we all know that Phoenix has clinched the playoffs, and we're the first to do so, as well as the first to clinch the, in this case, Pacific Division. So coming into this match, we had 59 points, well out in front. We are playing for points, which is to say we're playing for home field advantage. We really want to play at Wild Horse Pass in that amazing setting all the way through the postseason and hopefully through the finals. So those are kind of the stakes for us. This was our fourth time playing Oakland. The first match, we beat them 3-0. The second, 1-0. And the third, they beat us 1-3 or 3-1, however you look at that. So we still have no losses in our new stadium, undefeated, if you will, at Wild Horse Pass. We're 11-0-3 at home. So that's something else that we're really trying hard to maintain. We want it to be a fortress that people don't want to come to, especially in that postseason. So that's kind of the stakes for Phoenix heading into this match. For Oakland, a very different story. They had 34 points. They recently, just the previous week, week 23, dropped out of fourth, that playoff contention spot. A win puts them back above the line with 37 points. So they were in number 5 heading into this match. Los Dos, who was in number 4, had already played on Friday night. So they knew if they beat Phoenix, they were going to move above the line. So the stakes are really high for them. I mean, going into this game, they had 27 games played. They have 15 potential points. That's 49 possible. Really, they're playing for fourth place. I mean, third is a stretch for them, but it's still a possibility. So they're playing as if their whole season depends on it, because it does. So I think kind of the only worry for me moving into this is just, would Phoenix take Oakland seriously enough? And I think that we did. And I think the lineup reflected that. So that was kind of the stage that was set moving into this match.
Awesome. So a beautiful segue onto the action on the pitch. Let's start with your overall thoughts of the game, and then we'll get onto the highlights and then the lineup. So Kelly, take us through overall thoughts. But before you do, I'm going to quote Jake Anderson from ArizonaSports.com. In his write-up, he said, Phoenix could have and probably should have blown the doors wide open in the match, having outshot Oakland 25-14. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree with him. Overall thoughts, this was a little bit of an underwhelming match for me. You know, please don't take it the wrong way. I'm delighted to win. I'm delighted for those 3 points. We achieved our goal, clean sheet, unbeaten at home, getting points. So on paper, that's exactly what you want. But I'm really leaning towards unity with Jake Anderson on this one. This is a team that we can beat handily. This is a team we should beat handily, particularly at home. I think our focus has to be on working more together as a team, linking up more, and especially, underscore this, our finishing. We need to score more goals. We have the opportunity. Jake put it as 25 shots on goal. Where's the finishing? Who is our leading goal scorer? And we can talk about that a little bit more. I've got some statistics to share when it comes to that, you know, that front line.
Awesome. And I completely agree as far as the overall thoughts. I'm just going to get into to say that the first goal came in the 11th minute. And I feel like we knew that it was coming. There was no shortage of action leading up to it. In the opening minutes of the game, it was super exciting. We were clearly winning midfield. We were intercepting the ball. We were moving with confidence and fluidity. Darren Maddox, his first few touches gave us a look at how effective he is with his feet. Darnell King had a shot on goal from outside the 18-yard box, and it looked destined for the net, but it was just off target. We saw a beautiful long ball from midfield, but it was lower than Quinn and Moore were expecting. And much to the relief of the Oakland defenders, it hit Quinn on the back. Our captain, Solomon Asante, was in the box. He blasted a ball towards goal. It bounced off an Oakland player who was happy to be in the right place at the right time. And shortly after that, Solo was tripped. He tried to take a quick free kick, but the ref wasn't having it. And for that, we're thankful, because it's what led to that goal. As I mentioned, that goal was in the 11th minute, came from the right side of the pitch, about 25 yards out. Aidan Quinn sent a perfectly weighted ball in towards goal. Maddox raced towards the goal, head down like a sprinter coming over the finishing line. He connected with the ball, leaving behind a goalkeeper and a defensive line wondering what had just happened. Kelly, how'd you like that first 11, 15 or so minutes of the game?
Very, very, very exciting. And you're right, we did come out pretty strong. It was really nice to see that shot from King. It was nice to see shots coming out of Asante. So it was an exciting 11 minutes. And I think the goal was beautiful. You know, this is how it's happening lately for Phoenix Rising. These are the ways in which we're connecting. It's set pieces and oftentimes with service from Aidan Quinn. This is, I think, his 8th assist on the season. He has beautiful delivery. Darren Maddox and the rest of the players did a great job staying on sides. And Darren put his head on that ball, and it was challenging. You said he was in like a sprinter. He kind of looked like a bull, you know. He wanted a header. That's how he wanted it to happen, and he made it happen. And so it was beautiful. It was great delivery, and it was a great finish. And, you know, you would have liked for that to have motivated and sort of opened up the scoring. But, you know, this will be the final scoreline, 1-0 Phoenix. So, you know, I think Maddox laid off the press a little bit. I think he set back a little bit after this. I think he was contented with one goal, is sort of how it felt and looked. But hey, let's not take away from the celebration after that first goal. It was beautiful. And certainly kudos to Aidan Quinn. I thought he put in an amazing shift all night, all over. And this was one example of what he brings to the team.
Yeah, after that first goal, Kelly, I think that everybody in the stands was expecting it to be one of those games where we would have a goal every 15 minutes or so. But like you said, that's not what we got. How would you describe the game from there on?
Well, there were some moments of brilliance. We did see that we had some wonderful shots. I mean, I think there was actually the other team had some good shots too. I was just looking in the 22nd minute there was kind of a crossbar save, you know, so it was pretty split. I mean, it was pretty split literally in terms of possession. I'm not looking at the stats now, but it was pretty split in terms of duels. So like I said, it was a little bit slow. It was a little bit uninspired. The main thing that stuck out to me, first of all, I will compliment our back line. I will absolutely compliment Andre Rawls and get into a little bit of his statistics. He was amazing. The back line did a great job keeping that clean sheet as well as shutting down Oakland's captain, Wall Fall. He is very powerful. He's very tall. I'm not sure who really lined up with him on the evening. I think Kevin Lambert did a lot to shut him down. I think Musa did a lot to shut him down. So, you know, taking him out of the attack effectively was a great job by our back line. But I think our forwards were a little uninspired. I think Maddox didn't keep up the press, forcing errors out of their back line as much as I would have liked to have seen. I don't think we were particularly creative on the attack. I think our midfield was shut down a little bit. They had a hard time with distribution. We saw Santi Moer cutting in ineffectively, unable to get to the ball to Maddox. Asante had a couple of nice shots, but otherwise, you know, he had a lot of time on the ball, but he didn't make a lot happen. And so, you know, I'm not criticizing, but in terms of playoff play, in terms of the postseason, in terms of really like showing who we are as a team, it wasn't there in terms of goals scored, final third, and creative attack. So I was looking at a few stats in relationship to our front line, kind of talking about the uninspired, maybe the difficulty in communication between our frontline players. So, you know, most noteworthy is Solomon Asante. He had a few really great shots on the evening, but we haven't seen much from him production-wise in the last few games. I think it's maybe been 12 games since he's put a goal in the back of the net. So looking at minutes played, goals versus minutes played, right now Solomon Asante has a goal every 238 minutes. This is not particularly impressive for a striker, especially one of his caliber, especially one who has led the USL in terms of goal scoring several seasons in a row. So let's compare that to Santi Moer. He has a goal every 159 minutes compared to Solo's 238. And then compare that to Darren Maddox, a relatively new number nine, who has a goal every 111 minutes. So you can kind of see we don't have a ton of goal scoring happening, especially compared to those top goal scorers right now this season in the USL. And we certainly don't have great goal scoring when we look at Solomon Asante compared to what we know he's capable of. So when I kind of look at the game and look at what happened, it brings me back to Jake Anderson's quote, which is, we really should have had more goals. We really need to work on that finishing. We need to work on that creativity. And there needs to be better communication and playmaking amongst our forward line.
Kelly, you talked about how the ball hit our crossbar in the 22nd minute. And I felt like things changed after that. It woke us up to the fact that we're playing a team who knows how to break down the opposition. We're playing a team who can handle possession and bring the ball forward. We're playing a team who knows how to go route one, go right over the top with the long balls. And I think we started to become a lot more defensive at that point. And so the excitement was gone. At that point, for me, it was more of a grind to the end for the rest of the game. We had some noteworthy players on the other team. You mentioned Wall Fall, their captain. Kai Green was there. Akeem Ward had a strong game on the right fullback position. Ornestol was good. Mumba was good. Jose Hernandez was good. Johnny Rodriguez was good. I mentioned last week in the preview to this that they have good players, but their good players are no match for ours. And I think we proved that last night by containing them. We didn't defeat them 4-0, 5-0, but we definitely contained them. So Kelly, let's get into the lineup. In goal, we had Andre Rawls. What a game he had. In the back line, we had Tate Schmidt and Darnell Kings, our full backs, and center backs, James Musa and Joey Farrell. In the center of the field, we had Aidan Quinn, Kevin Lambert, and Arturo Rodriguez. And up front, we had Santi Mor, Darren Maddox, and Solomon Asante. You've already mentioned a lot of highlights from them. Do you have anything else to add?
I think probably the most notable thing was just seeing Schmidt on that lineup playing fullback. You know, we know that the last two games he started, he's had back-to-back red cards. So this for me was a big surprise to see him in a starting lineup. I think, you know, it's a testament to how much faith and confidence our manager Chance has with him. And we know they have history dating back many, many years. So that was interesting to me, and, you know, good for Chance for putting that faith back in Tate Schmidt. We know he's a quality player. We know he's a fantastic defender who has definitely had some lapses in judgment, but I was surprised to see him, more so when I noticed that on the substitute list, we don't have Ryan Flood, which is kind of his natural substitution. In fact, we don't have anyone on the substitutions list that plays that outside back position. So in terms of notables for me, looking at the lineup, that's one. Andre Rawls had an exceptional game. As you mentioned, the back line did a great job together, working together, containing those players that you just mentioned, keeping that clean sheet for sure. And then, you know, just a little bit of a lack of inspiration from our forward line. You know, a standout for me was Quinn. I think he is really playing fantastically over the last probably 5-6 games, very productive. And, you know, also kudos to Kevin Lambert for providing some fantastic defensive effort as well. I think he was pretty critical in containing their captain, Walfall, as well. So those are kind of my primary thoughts when I look at our starting 11.
Our coach, Rick Shawns, made 5 substitutions on the night. There were late substitutions, Madrid, Baquero, Calistri, and Sadie. But Loera came on the 68th minute, and I thought he shook things up. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's interesting because he's replacing Rodriguez, who we know likes to shake things up. We know could be a big playmaker. But in this case, in this game on the evening, I think Loera really was a spark. Hard to explain. I mean, I think part of it is just he's inspiring. He's so fast on the ball. And he's so clever. I mean, if you watch his play in the final third, at one point he had a beautiful link up with Maddox, which led to a pass with a beautiful overlapping run by King. So I just kind of think he sparked and energized the entire team. He's great using open spaces. He really seems to have a high game IQ, knowing when to move with the ball. We heard him in a post-game interview, which was really nice to hear from him, just saying he feels so comfortable with the team. He feels comfortable with the way he's being coached. He understands that he can do what he wants. He fits in the system, but he also is able to be himself, express himself, and it looks great. You know, I think it's a big question mark for the other team. What's he going to do? So he's a really nice like-for-like substitution for Rodriguez. And in this case, I think he just really up-leveled both the energy as well as kind of the playmaking, which is what we were missing.
Okay, Kelly, it's onward and upward for this team. So wrap it up for us with your closing comments.
Sure. Well, you know, it's really exciting. We are heading down the final stretch and we're doing what we wanted to do, which is picking up points. We have 4 games left, which is mind blowing. I know it's been a long and exciting season, but it's still crazy that the end is in sight. You know, something exciting that happened on the evening is that the Rowdies lost. Everyone knows Phoenix Rising has their eyes on the Rowdies in terms of, you know, not to be overly bold or make assumptions that we'll meet them in the final, but if we were to, we'd love to do so at home. Right now, Phoenix Rising and the Rowdies have the same number of games played, the same number of potential points left. We both have 4 games. Looking at our schedule, it's possible. We need to win them all. We can win them all. The most important thing that we do is keep our head down, build momentum. The next two games are on the road, and it's really critical that we win them. We're going to OC. We're going to Vegas. I wish I could be there to cheer the team on. Hopefully some of our awesome Phoenix Rising fans will be there. We just beat OC at home. We need to do it again. It's dollar beer night there. So if you can make it, make it show up and cheer. But it's going to be about winning those games on the road. We know pretty comfortably we can come back to Wild Horse Pass and wrap it up. But interestingly, if you look at the schedule for Phoenix Rising, you know, these are doable. These are games we can win, especially if we pick up those points on the road. And if you look at the Rowdies schedule, I don't have it in front of me, but I will mention they too are going to Cashman Field to face Las Vegas. So, you know, if you're really in the mood to travel, it might be a good time to become a Las Vegas fan and go there, you know, when they face off against the Rowdies. So, hey, we're looking at the end and it's looking great. Absolutely opportunity for Phoenix Rising to pick up all 16 points and clinch home field advantage all the way through the postseason. That's our goal. I think we can do it. I can't wait to watch it.
Kelly, thank you for joining us. It's great talking football with you. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Phoenix Rising family, we're going to preview those games that Kelly just mentioned. So stick around for the next segment and thank you for listening.
This is Niall Dunn, defender of the Phoenix Rising, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Hello, USL Championship League fans. We just wrapped week 25, and we are cruising full speed towards the playoffs. Believe it or not, we are still looking at a field where teams have played a different number of games. Some teams have played 26, some have played 29. It's crazy, and it makes it even harder to anticipate which teams are going to make it to the postseason. I will say this, most teams have played 27 or 28 games, which means they have 4 or 5 games remaining. All teams, remember, will play 32 games in the regular season. Let's take a look at the standings across the league and see who's currently in playoff contention. Starting with the Atlantic Division, we have the Tampa Bay Rowdies. They're on top, clinched the division, clinched the playoffs. So, Tampa Bay Rowdies, Pittsburgh Riverhounds, Charlotte Independents, and the Miami FC. I mentioned the Tampa Bay Rowdies have clinched their division as well as the playoffs. So have the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. They are the second team that is going into the playoffs with the Atlantic Division. Charlotte Independents are in third. Miami FC are in fourth. Charleston Battery still has a chance. They're in fifth position with 34 points. It's going to take a miracle, but it's possible for them to make it into the playoffs. The other three teams in this division are out. It's over. Good night, Nurse. Hartford Athletic is out. New York Red Bulls 2 are gone, and Loudoun United said goodbye a few weeks ago. So, a couple of notable things from this division. I mentioned the Rowdies have clinched it. What I also want to mention is that they lost this past week, week 25, to the Riverhounds, who are in position number 2. So, they are a team to watch for sure. In general, Phoenix Rising fans are watching the Tampa Bay Rowdies. They have the same number of games played as Phoenix. However, they have one less point. They're sitting at 61 points, which means if both Phoenix and the Tampa Bay Rowdies win all of their remaining games this season, Phoenix will have one extra point, clinching home field advantage. That's the goal. That's the eye on the prize. Moving on to the Central Division. Team number 1, Louisville City FC. Number 2, Birmingham Legion FC. Number 3, FC Tulsa. And number 4, Memphis 901 FC. The top two teams in the Central Division have also clinched the playoffs, although the division title is still up for grabs. This is a pretty tight field. Louisville and Birmingham are only separated by 2 points at the top. FC Tulsa and Memphis are only separated by 1 point. So that's teams 3 and 4. I should also mention that team 5, OKC Energy FC, is only 2 points behind that playoff line. Behind that, you've got Atlanta United 2 and Indy 11 tied with 31 points. Anything can still happen within this division, except for Sporting Kansas City 2. The lights have been turned out. So again, Louisville City, Birmingham Legion, FC Tulsa, and Memphis 901. Next week, I mentioned we're going to get into talking about how the playoffs are structured, just for fun, just for something to keep in mind. If the playoffs were tomorrow, the Tampa Bay Rowdies, number one in the Atlantic Division, would play Memphis 901 FC, who are number four in the Central Division, and the Tampa Bay Rowdies would have home field advantage. On the flip side, Louisville City FC, number one in the Central Division, would play number four, the Miami FC, and that's the Atlantic Division. Once again, Louisville would have home field advantage because they're sitting at first place. So that's just a little glimpse into what we can expect. Moving on to the Western Conference standings, starting with that Mountain Division, here are your top four teams currently in playoff contention above the line: El Paso Locomotive FC, San Antonio FC, the Colorado Springs Switchbacks FC, and Austin Bold FC. In this division, only one team has clinched the playoffs, and that's El Paso Locomotives. They have 55 points. So, taking a look at this division, a couple of notables. Teams 6, 5, and 4 are all very close, only separated by 2 points. So position number 4 is still very much up for grabs, currently held by Austin Bold FC. Moving on to the Pacific Division. Everyone's favorite division. On top, you've got Phoenix Rising FC. They were the first to clinch the playoffs. They were the first to clinch their division. They have 62 points. Second place, San Diego Loyal. Third place, Orange County SC. And fourth place, right now, LA Galaxy 2, Los Dos. So, things to keep in mind. Position number one is pretty much locked. Phoenix Rising is going to have home field advantage moving into the quarterfinals of the Western Conference Division. San Diego Loyal is sitting pretty comfortably at number two. Orange County SC is going to be fighting for their life to get position number two for home field advantage. It's going to be tough for them. If you look at the rest of the field, LA Galaxy 2 is only 2 points behind Orange County in position four. 1 point behind that, we have the Oakland Roots in position five. 1 point behind that, we have Tacoma Defiance in position number six. 1 point behind that, we have the Sacramento Republic FC with 32 points. So there's only a 3-point spread between position four and position seven. Everything is still up for grabs in terms of position four, and LA Galaxy or anyone else could easily move into position number three. So it's pretty much wide open except for that top spot. And as we know, the lights are gone. They're done. Their season's over. But let me tell you, they're still hanging in. They're still fighting for their lives. So that's where things stand heading into week 26, and it's going to be a crazy week where playoff bids live or die. On Wednesday night, watch out for Lou City clashing against Memphis in Memphis. El Paso is matching up against the Colorado Switchbacks, and then check out Phoenix Rising, who's playing against Orange County SC, their final matchup of the season at Orange County. And that's just Wednesday night. On Saturday night, you've got Charleston headed to North Carolina. That's number five playing number four in the Atlantic Division. They're taking on the Independents in North Carolina, and it's their last grasp at playoff contention. It's an unlikely bid. They might have to turn out their lights. Tune into that game. The Riverhounds travel to Miami, and a win by Miami will pull them level with the Riverhounds, going from position four up to a tie with position two in the race for that coveted number two position in the Atlantic Division. Hey, I hope everyone has a great week and enjoys all of these great games. Phoenix Rising fans are looking forward to two W's on the road. I know it's going to happen. Stick around to catch Niall's game previews. Thanks for joining me. I'm already looking forward to next week. We'll talk about the standings and we'll review the playoff structure. It's time to lay out all the details and use some real-time examples as teams lock in their playoff positions.
Hi, everyone. This is Brandon Keniston, goalkeeper with Phoenix Rising, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Phoenix Rising family, on Wednesday, October 13th, we travel back to California to take on Orange County, a rematch of the game we played less than 2 weeks ago on October 2nd. I always look forward to a trip to their beautiful soccer stadium. Ah, the memories of the pitch invasion when we beat them in the Western Conference Final in 2018. This will be our fourth and last time playing Orange County in the regular season. Of the other three games, one ended in a draw and two ended in a hard-fought victory for our boys. Games against Orange County are typically low-scoring affairs, with the victor winning by just one goal, and that's what happened in our last game when Darren Maddox scored the winning goal, the only goal of the match. Since that game, things have changed. Each of the teams have had only one game. Phoenix went on to beat Oakland Roots, thank you Darren Maddox, Andrew Rawls, and the Phoenix Rising Crossbar, and Orange County went on to lose 4-1 to Tacoma Defiance. That game was in Tacoma, where their forward, number 98, Sam Adeniran, scored a hat-trick against OC. Orange County are clearly on a poor run of form. They've lost three of the last five, their win rate is 37% overall, and that falls to 31% when they play at home. It's crazy, they played 13 home games and only won four of them. It's rough to be an OC supporter. Having said that, we can't write OC off. They're in third place in the standings, and it's unlikely that they'll end up any better than that. But they must fight to keep that third place spot, as Los Dos, Oakland Roots, and Tacoma Defiance are all nipping at their heels. We're in week 25 of the regular season, and if OC suffer two losses this week, they could slip not just from their third place spot, but they could fall out of playoff contention altogether. This is a crucial week for them, and they'll be pulling out all the stops. The bigger question surrounding this game is how Phoenix will face the pressure. With two games on the docket in 1 week, will coach Rick Shantz again make major changes to the starting 11, like he did when we lost against Los Dos on September 29th and that loss against Oakland Roots on October 25th? Will he risk playing a less taxing, less intense, more defensive game than we're used to? I don't know. I hope not. We know exactly what we're up against with OC. There are no surprises about who'll be on the field like there is when we play MLS 2 teams. We know what we have to deal with, and we know that Orange County will be riled up clinging on to that third place spot. The stakes are high for OC. The stakes are high for us too. We're fighting for home field advantage in the playoffs. We're fighting for top place against top contenders in other divisions. El Paso and San Antonio in the Mountain Division, Louisville City and Birmingham Legion in the Central Division, and then in the Pacific Division, Pittsburgh Riverhounds, and I can barely get the words out, Tampa Bay Rowdies. I absolutely can't wait for this game. Good luck to our boys who have a tough opponent ahead of them, and good luck to our coach, Rick Shantz, who has nothing but tough decisions ahead of him. Based on past games, I'd be a fool to predict anything better than a 1-0 win to Phoenix. So obviously, my prediction is 4-0. Go Rising! We're not done yet, Phoenix Rising family. Our second game of the week is on Saturday, October 15th, another road game, this time against Las Vegas Lights. Everything I said about Phoenix in the OC game holds for this game too. The stakes are high and the possibility of us resting players is high. What's different about this opponent is that we don't know what we're going to get. Will LAFC coach Bob Bradley allow Musovski, Jennings and Dukes to play for the Lights? Or will he need them for an MLS game? The Las Vegas Lights haven't beat us in our three games against them this season, but we did lose points that last time we went to Vegas, which was August the 7th. We had a strong starting 11 that night, yet Vegas managed to draw 2-2. What might happen to us again if we have tired legs and sore bodies? I'll tell you what will happen. The stakes are too high and everyone knows it. Our boys will run on adrenaline. They'll play their hearts out and do whatever it takes to bring home the dub. We are Phoenix Rising and we don't stop. We are Phoenix Rising. We'll take it all the way. We are the fan experience and we're delighted to have you join us and can't wait to have you back here next week. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Kelly, for all that you do for this show. My name is Niall McCarthy, and you know what comes next. Say it with me. Go Rising! One more time like you mean it. Go Rising!